Hello and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malzahn read-through podcast. My name is AJ Filari, and I have not read all the books. I am reading them for the first time. With me today is my friend and closest confidant who has read all the books. It's Peter Bond.
I am furious with Will Shorts and the New York Times. Sick of this liberal bullshit. We're going to boycott the New York Times crossword section. The clue was greener energy source, and the answer was clean coal.
I know.
Fucking bullshit,
the other
baby.
Day I was so pissed.
What the fuck is this?
I didn't know fucking big coal had bought up New York Times. I was so
fucking
pissed, too.
Being unbelievable. Which, unbelievable.
Let me knock out today's Wordle while we're doing this intro.
Also with me is the light of my life, the star of my world, India Jones.
I was really not sure how you were going to top friend and closest confidant, but you did that. Good morning, everyone.
I'm glad. I really tried. And the person I made all these wax figures for, it's Joshua Baker.
And look, I know what you're thinking. Yes, it is a sex thing. Yes, I squeeze them with my toes.
I'm glad that we have that cleared up, because I was curious what you did with them and why you kept asking.
Now we know why he's getting into Warhammer. It's
right.
It's a sex thing.
Exactly.
There you go. Today on the show, this Malzahn read-through show, we're talking about chapters 21 and 22 of Reaper's Gale by Stephen. I almost gave him a fake middle name. Stephen Erickson. I feel like we're not on that level. I feel like I can't call him like Stephen Thomas Erickson.
Stephen D. and Erickson.
Thomas is a good one. Whoa, that's my middle name. All right. Let's pull it.
I don't have an intro bit today, but I did get some new pens from the local wholesale store. So my notes today are in black and red pen so that I know when I want to ask a question. Because notoriously, that's something I have a hard time doing.
That's really smart.
Thank you. What's your guys' pen life? I know there's a few people in some discords I'm in who are extremely into fountain pens. Do you guys like pens? Are you more of like a, I mean, Josh, you're a teacher, so you're probably using red pen all the time.
I don't use a red pen ever.
Really?
I am very particular about black pens. I will buy one singular one to test out if I like it, and then I will go buy a pack. And then when I'm finished with that pack, I will go try out a new type of pen.
Josh, why don't you use red pens?
Well, it's pretty great. You see, I teach band, so I essentially never give written work.
Nice.
That makes sense. Because I use the red pen all the time. And only
well, you teach language. Yeah. So
Josh, what's your go-to right now?
I literally couldn't tell you if I tried.
Oh, well. Pete, you like a red pen. What's your red pen game?
Cheap is what my game is. What am I gonna fucking have an opinion about pens? Not for me. That's not my life.
No.
I mean, God bless people. I'm not trying to whatever, but I'm just like, those dollar store, just like, here's 70 pens. Yeah, that's what works for me.
Oh, I can't do that. No, I do buy the nice three packs. Like, I do think I'm using Sharpies right now, for the record. Mm. I think I'm using Sharpie pens.
I do like a marker pen. India, what about you? You have any opinions?
I fucking hate a marker pen. Anything with like ink that like spreads is awful. I'm more of like a gel kind of girl. Pens are really important in my sister and my friend Kenley's line of work. They are nurses.
Yeah.
So I've really learned a lot about pen things.
Do you know what's fucked? You know, in school, everyone's like, you should use pencils. You can erase your work, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then you get into the real world, everyone's like, get that pencil out of my sight.
Absolutely.
We're only using pens in this house.
Absolutely.
You know, the only time... I remember literally, you know, using pencils all through everything. And then at the SATs, they're like, you have to fill this part out in pen. And I panicked. I was like,
Do you remember the hardest part of the SATs? They handed to you and they're like, now write this entire, go flip it over. And on the back, there's a whole test, like,
100%.
You know, test morals paragraph you had to copy in cursive. Yeah. And it was the
in
worst
cursive.
Fucking part.
Anyway, we're millennials, so...
we're part of that very small group also that has to say our SAT scores on a 2400 scale, and like it was only for like those 4 years, so it never makes sense.
And now it's going back. Oh my god,
16,
it's like,
I know.
All right, well, this intro's gone on for too long.
I guess this was radio. We're a Malzahn. We're doing Malzahn.
Yeah, we're clearly. I said that up front. And if you can't tell, if you missed that, and you can't tell this is Malzahn's show, that's on you. But let's go ahead and get into it. I'll read my notes written by my Sarasa Dry X30 black pen.
Let's go. Here I got go. Wordle number five.
Me too. No, I was also a number five today. Good job. Chapter 21. Fiddler and Gessler's squads have gotten separated. Through the eyes of a cat, Bottle sees that the village ahead has been taken by another group of bone hunters. Hellion and her squad are getting drunk in a tavern. They figured out who to liberate. The Indebted. Fiddler and Gessler and Stormy's squads make it to the tavern. Stormy brings out some ale in flagons carved with what Gessler thinks is old early. Korik demands Smiles get rid of her bleckerworm fetishes. She refuses. Bottle sees that there are Eater coming. Hundreds of them. Beak has been covering the Bone Hunter's tracks without rest for days. Faradan's sort tells him to rest, but he can't. The candles won't go out. The Eater begin their assault on the village. Korab's luck continues to keep him alive. Baden Gruk joins up with Sergeant Primley's squad, and they join the battle in the village, ultimately turning the tides and leading to an Eater retreat. Smiles asks Korik to lie about her being a royal, so Skulldeath from the 10th will lay with her. Skulldeath has been saving his seed for royalty. Bottle tells Korik that Skulldeath is a type of flower that hijacks the growth of other flowers, proliferating its spread. Quickben hears the Imass singing in Eris All, the first language. Hedge tells Quick he thinks Tavor is marching to face the crippled god, and that he's skeptical of Quick working with Shadowthrone and Cotillion. Troll talks to Hostile Raider, who tells him that this Talon is an illusion, preserved by a Bentract bone caster who sacrificed herself, but that the illusion is fading. Hostile believes that he and his people must prepare for the illusion to dissipate, but Rud Alal is not having it. Onrak pledges to stay by Rud's side, not being able to bear losing his humanity again. Troll waxes poetic about the power of friendship. Quickben observes Hostile Raider kneeling to pledge allegiance to Rud, and tells Hedge that the finest of Scabandari Bloodeye is here. Right here. Saren Padak observes her companions some more. Udinas reveals Clip's rings and chain to be a garrote. Quickly deflecting, Clip begins to walk through the huge gate ahead of them. Clip and Silchus Ruin each walk through, followed by Udinas and Kettle holding hands, and finally, Fear and Saren. They emerge into a world covered in volcanic ash, three blazing suns in a pitch black sky. All around them, scores of dead dragons. Clip turns to face the group and welcomes them to Starvald Demolane. All right. So this chapter battle happens. A lot of battles this week in these chapters.
I loved both these chapters so much.
Josh, I knew you would. And don't worry, we'll get to it. But first,
These were written for Josh.
Right, Baker. These were Josh chapters. But first, I do have a question for Pete. And Pete, I know you texted me immediately before we started recording. It was like, make sure you ask Josh and India most of the questions. Would you want Hellion to liberate you?
You know, it's always nice when you spend some time with characters like this. And I find like these moments are kind of what makes you attached to Hellion more as a character, I feel. I mean, I already like her a lot. But... you know, it's just I kind of enjoy hanging out with her sometimes. And there is this trophy taking aspect that's a little grim. But I enjoy this pre part of the battle with them. So I wouldn't mind being liberated by Hellion.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty. I don't know. I guess Hellion's squad is really the only one who's like been in the shit. Right. Like everybody else has kind of just like come across Eater and stuff to battle. But I feel like Hellion has like been to, I mean, villages, obviously. Has anybody else like have any of the other armies?
Well, I feel like that we hear Hellion squad, we definitely see, but the other squads have definitely been fighting. We just, I feel like, hear about it more.
Yeah, but
my understanding.
But have they been in have they been in situations where they would have been able to liberate the Indebted? Do you think? I don't know if that's really made clear.
I feel like the difference is that what they were told was kill Eater.
Yeah.
And Hellion is the one who has made the decision to kill Letheri specifically. Like, even if it's a subset of them, everyone else has been doing their best to not kill Atheri as much as possible.
Okay. Yeah, that tracks. I just thought that was interesting that, like, I think it's cool. I think it's good that they've found, like, a people who need liberating.
Hellion's a genius.
Yeah, yeah, honestly, a drunken genius, I think, is what the Tor Reed calls her at one point. But yeah, so then the Bone Hunters are all coming back together. We're all coming, hanging out in the tavern. There's a weird flagon of ale that has maybe the word Risen Purple on it. I really stared at that sentence for minutes, trying to think of, like, whose name could this be? Because it's got to mean something.
What is this?
And hey, apparently you don't need to have a finger bone fetish in order to be a bone hunter, because Smiles is just walking around with dicks on her fucking, like, dicks as a necklace.
Yeah, see, that's what I meant. And that's a bit grim.
It's a bit grim.
I mean, it's pretty funny, though.
Yeah.
I think it's played for laughs. I think it's a bit grim.
It's super grim. It's definitely grim, and it's definitely also played for laughs. And it did make me laugh. The first time I read it, I was like, what are these weird worms? And then I read the paragraph again. I was like, oh, they're not worms. We're back with Beak. Indy, these are some Beak-heavy chapters. What do you think about... I mean, we started off with Beak. How'd that strike you for setting the tone for these chapters?
I love Beak.
Yeah.
Still. As I read these chapters, I was starting to wonder, I feel like something's happening with Beak. Power is getting a little, you know, overwhelming.
The candles won't go out.
And then another time they were like, I forgot what exactly the conversation was, but Beak was like, well, you guys are with me, and if you're with me, you'll be fine. And I was like, the fuck does that mean, Beak?
It's another one of those things where, like, when somebody else says it, you're like, yeah, sure. But when Beak says it, it's like, oh, no, this is like a prophecy.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So, he is being very honest.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I was, like, intrigued by that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love Beak's POV.
Yeah. We'll come back to it. Don't worry. So there's this big battle down in the village. Bunch of shit's happening. Korab is just getting lucky again and again.
That's the funniest thing. Every time the luck things happen, I just laugh. Like, he, like, doesn't know what to do and then tripped. And it was just so funny.
And the tripping, like, worked out.
Killed everyone.
And someone was like, you got to make sure you're aiming your spears or your whatever he was shooting, because you can't tell me that you meant to bounce it off that plate and into that guy's head. It's like, damn. Would you guys have, like, I feel like this is the one of the things that, like, I for sure know if we weren't doing the podcast, I would have forgotten about the Korab Opon connection. Do you feel like that?
Oh, by now. Yeah, for sure.
So funny you mentioned that. I was going to ask you guys. I forgot why he was so lucky, and I still did. So podcast didn't help me remember that. I guess the Opon thing makes sense. Like, I would have assumed that, but
yeah. Yeah. I mean, either way, he has unnatural luck.
When did it happen?
Right? It was in Bone Hunters. I don't exactly remember what it was. I think it was from an Opon POV, wasn't it? Or something.
It's just kind of, like, said that he's touched by Opon, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't exactly remember what the inciting event was, but it's definitely something I can't not think about anymore. Like,
yeah, well, I had forgotten it, that even was a thing until we talked about it on the podcast a good few episodes ago. But now it's in my head forever.
Right. Yeah. It's just like one of those things, like, every time Korab comes up, it's like, oh, what's going to happen? And I feel like this would be one of those things that, like, if I was reading this on my own for the first time, I, like, would forget about it. And then eventually later I'd be like, oh, my God, I can't believe I forgot about this. And then on a reread, it would be like, it's right there every single time. Like, even in this scene, there's, like, a pile of bodies because, you know, it's hundreds of Eater storming this town. And Korab ends up on the bottom of this body pile somehow. And then he's like, luckily, though, he climbs out. It's like, OK, well,
right.
Yeah. So the battle happens, and then,
I just want to jump in. I mean, my understanding is that Korab's great luck even extends to his time in House of Chains, so, I would not.
Oh.
I do think
he
it's...
He gets lucky in House of Chains, he had the helmet with the munition, but I don't think we know how he gets lucky then.
But I think they spell out more in text the connection in Bone Hunters. So I was just like,
they definitely say touched by Opon at some point.
Yeah, I think they bring that into the text. I'm just clarifying, you know.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I completely forgot. I can't believe I forgot about that scene, because I was so hot on that that helmet over the cusser scene, because it's so good.
It is.
Battle happens. It's fine. Bone Hunters.
It's fine. Ugh.
It's not fine. It will be fine. Because we meet a whole new squad with a whole bunch of new names. Indio, what do you think about Bad and Gruck? What do you think about Sergeant Primly?
Literally.
This is why I asked you this question.
So when I'm reading these books, usually I'm just like reading and I try my absolute hardest to not have to reread things 15 times. But I swear, when I saw the name Bad and Gruck, Ruffle, I was like, there's no way. There's no way that these are new people. Like, when did I meet these people?
Yeah, I agree. I had that same moment.
I thought Primly sounded really familiar, but that was the only one.
They all, like, they... Gruck? I don't know where I've seen a U and a K before, but... I was like, I definitely know this person. And it was until just now that you're telling me that we're just meeting them that I now I'm like, okay, fine. I guess we never met them before.
I personally can't remember us meeting. It might have been a name.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I just don't like to believe that I've never met anyone in the seventh book of a series.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, these are all brand new folk, I guess.
Yeah.
I love them all.
I think my favorite one is Vastly Blank, who's the one who just has a really bad short-term memory.
Oh, is that their shtick? I didn't get a lot of the shticks, so I'm going to be honest. I just kind of was...
That was like the only one I picked up vibing on. It's really good. His name is Vastly Blank, and he forgets stuff. Really, really good shit. Also, something interesting, and maybe it's not, Pete, you could, anyone, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, there's a fair amount of Dalhanese people in this squad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure that I was reading that right. That's pretty interesting, I think, right? Of like a whole squad of Dalhanese people. I don't know. Did we think that was interesting at all?
He was like, let's throw some color in this book.
Kind of, yeah.
Throw a little melanin in this book.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess in like real wars and stuff, there was like the, oh, fuck. My history's not good. Oh, God. They were the vanguard for like the Marines in like Vietnam or whatever. They would send like all of the black soldiers and stuff like up front.
Sure. It's not unheard of to have like a squad or a battalion have some sort of connection.
But
like
anyway, I'm not, one of them has Ototaro blades. I didn't clock.
Yeah.
That was
I thought that one was kind of like, well, you're just really just sliding that one in, huh?
He's just got two blades that he's really good with. I was like, okay.
In fairness, I feel like that's like a super useful thing. Like pretty, like that should be common. Should commonly have Ototaro.
I think they should, but they distinctly don't commonly. So I was like, who's this fool?
Yeah, I think part of it is it's probably dangerous to have those blades when you have squad mages. Like, if everybody has them, I think the power probably gets amplified in some way. You know,
right.
I don't know. So we meet this whole squad. We do this whole thing. We meet the best boy, Vastly Blank. And then they all head in and turn the tides of the battle in the village.
The midnight tides.
Yeah. Yes, India.
Nice. Yes. But before they're able to like get there and cause the Eater retreat, there's some people die. Herb gets injured. There's some I think Lutz dies.
Who?
Lutz? I don't know. Just one of the... I'm just trying to think. There's some minor named bone hunters that...
Yeah. That 100% could be the name of a character. I forgot that person existed.
Person does exist, and they are dead now.
Some people... Some sad. People...
They did exist.
Some people perish, for sure.
And then we head into the aftermath. We got this... We're still hanging out with the Marines. I guess they're not technically Marines anymore, huh?
They are.
How do you know who's a Marine and who's not?
Everyone that is on the land invasion is a Marine.
Yeah, all the bone hunters are, I think, are just colloquially, they call them Marines.
No, not true.
Oh, it's just like Fiddler and Gessler's
because
squad.
Because Tavor's army, the army coming on the boats are not Marines.
Right, yeah. Like Fiddler and Gessler's squad and Stormy and stuff, all them, they're the Marines. And then...
Yeah, everyone we see in this chapter from the Malazan POV is a Marine.
And what is everyone else?
The infantry.
Yeah.
You know, the general army. Yeah, they don't have any cavalry, I'm pretty sure. Nope, they do have the couple remnants of the armies from Seven Cities, and some of them do have horses.
Anyway, so we're hanging with the Marines, and Smiles tells us about this character named Skull Death, who does not nut.
New favorite character.
I'm like really up in the air.
About Pete, not nutting?
No, just about this whole Skull Death thing, about like, he sleeps with men... And women? Question mark.
He does not sleep with women.
He does not sleep with women. Okay, because he doesn't want a nut because he's saving it for royalty.
Right.
What's this apprehension in your voice?
I don't know. It just like felt kind of weird. And I think really what struck me was the final like line of that or the final part of that section of Korik asking Bottle like, oh, these herbs that you're giving Smile so that she doesn't get pregnant. And Bottle's like, oh, no, that's not what those herbs do. They turn men who enjoy sleeping with men into men who enjoy sleeping with women. And then Korik or whoever. Yeah, I guess it was Korik at the end of that section is like, oh, poor Smiles. And like, that's it. And like, I don't know. It just like struck me in kind of a weird way. I was like, is this a gag? Are we goofing? I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh at this. Like, I don't think it didn't strike me as particularly funny, but like,
poor Smiles, why?
Because Skulldeath likes to sleep with men and the not nutting for royalty is just a thing they're making up. But I don't know if it is, because later when Hellion's like, I'm the queen of Kartul, he's like, I'm ready to nut. So I don't know. It just like feels like we're playing up Skulldeath sleeping with men as like it just feels like a gay joke, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, it sounds like the guy is like super duper confused and like knows he should, like, from his family perspective, be into women and sure, have a child, but probably just isn't interested in that. But also, he is severely confused about everything he wants and desires in his life. So,
yeah,
very confusing fellow. Very good at killing, though.
Very good at killing is the thing. Yeah.
You know, he never came at all, not even in his sleep.
Not even in his
sleep. Which is impressive.
Okay.
I don't know much about that, but
I just like, I don't know. I don't know what banging dudes means if you're not nutting. Like, what are we getting
What's
on?
What's the point?
Yeah. It sounds like he is being a bottom and choosing to willfully not nut after, like, during or after the intercourse.
Well, I don't know, man. It's
edging. Edging, guys. Edging. Yeah. Remember when we talked about edging?
Yeah, I was just saying, we're back to edging.
I didn't know what it was.
I don't know. I wish there were more gay dudes or dudes banging in this series. And I just feel like this is another weird, you know. I just feel like there are so few gay men in the series. And, you know, I guess there's a few bi men. And I just feel like in that void to just have another dude who I guess is like, I don't know. It's just like, I wish there was more there. And this guy is like, I guess technically this guy counts, and it just feels like a total flattening or a pedant of acknowledgement to a whole type of it feels like crumbs. So that's what my frustration is.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But yeah, we definitely don't see a lot of them. I can't name any off the top of my head.
Yeah,
besides Tavor, the adjunct, I guess.
Tavor's the most prominent. Listen, it's a whole other subject. That's I really want to stay that focus on other stuff today, but it's just
Can I point out, AJ, is this the chapter that we find out that Masan Gali has a sibling in this army, in this unit?
Masan Galani?
Yeah,
I didn't figure that out. Tell me.
Yeah, someone in here is straight up named last name of Galani, and like I can't remember who it was though.
Oh, well, that's not helpful. I didn't clock that.
I thought it was something to do with Skulldeath, but maybe I'm wrong. Here it is. Skulldeath, last surviving male of the Futani royal line of the Galani tribe. Oh, whoa. Okay. So they're part of a Galani tribe, but maybe they're not related.
But that's
okay.
Still pretty interesting, though. I don't know. I did catch that.
I was like, oh, like Masan, because they're from the same place.
Yeah.
But, okay. I thought they were siblings, but maybe they're just in the same tribe.
That's a fun connection. Thanks, Josh.
That is a cool spot. I actually, that's pretty interesting. So,
yeah.
Oh, wait, can I?
Yeah.
Can I real quick? The Discord's been yelling at us. I think I put the pieces together on Rotalal and Sharkalal.
Okay.
Sure.
I do think there is a scene in one of the earlier books where they're just like in the Mecro City. Mm. And I think they just see a dead person or a house or some sort of thing with the name Alal. And that's clearly now Sharkalal's great uncle who went there and
died.
Yeah,
there's an Arrak.
I think they just choose that name as Rud's last name or something. I feel like that happens maybe. Pete, am I close? The Discord says you can tell us. They say there's no impact on us knowing this.
My understanding is that is the connection. Honestly, before I did not know that connection before I looked it up while you guys were talking on the last show, because I was like, what the fuck are these guys talking about? That's insane. And then I looked it up. I was like, well, I guess it's technically this thing. But I believe you first pitched, you were like, they're brother and sister or something insane.
Right. But no, it's just like he saw the name of the Mecro City and took it. Is that right?
Which I think is like a pretty cool deep cut, you know?
Yeah. So.
Interesting.
It was only when the Discord was like, they know this, that I like was like, oh, yeah, very vaguely. Sort of remember
it is one of those things that's not literally like spelled out. It's just like if you really connect to disparate dots, you know.
And what yeah. is the point of that? Why the fuck do I want to connect disparate dots when I'm reading a disparate
points
dot?
And reasons? If you want points and reasons, Mousin's not the book series for you.
We're doing a connect the dots Sorry puzzle, and then there were two dots way, way out away from the puzzle that were Shirk and Rudolal.
That and have you connect, no point you connect in being those connected. Dots. Right, and doesn't yeah. matter if they're ever connected.
Yeah, exactly.
If you yep. if you look at this picture from this totally weird angle, then you'll see something not really relevant to the picture.
And if you remember the other picture from three books ago.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool, to be honest, but whatever. I get your point, Inge.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't yeah. find it pretty cool. to be honest.
Noted.
So moving on from the Bone Hunters and this village, we head on back over to Talon, question mark? This place that is apparently an illusion. Quick Ben hears the IMAS singing in Eris All, which apparently isn't just the name of a thing, of a being. It is also the name of the language. So that's not confusing at all. The first language.
Number one.
Quick Ben and Hedge talk a little bit about Shadowthrone and Cotillion. India, what do you think? Do you think Tavor is marching against the crippled god? And why?
Right. That's the question. What right. do I think? I don't know where Tavor... I have no idea where Tavor is going. I have no idea why Tavor is going.
Mm-hmm.
The crippled god thing, I could say yes, but if you asked me if she was marching toward Rulad, I'd say yeah. So I don't know why or how... or with like what confidence she would be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I feel like you're asking me that for a question, for a reason. And thus I'm going to say, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it came up in the chapter. I thought it was interesting. So I asked.
Right. But it's like, that's the thing too. I just don't know. I don't trust anything the chapters tell me either.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a good call.
What do you think about also in this Quick Ben Hedge conversation, we get a Sari name drop.
Sari name drop.
What do we think Absalar's up to?
Completely forgot she existed.
Me too, until I saw the Sari name drop. I was like, oh fuck, there's this whole other character I completely forgot about.
There are multiple other groups of people from last book right. that have just not turned up at all.
Yeah.
We kind of assumed that though, like when they were leaving, when they were making their final exit, it was like, well, I wonder if we're ever going to see them again. And Steve yeah. is like, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've seen her little friends. I can't remember their names. They've been in this book. I forget where and why, but they were in this book for a second.
Oh, right. The dragons.
The dragons, that's what it is. Yeah, well, I can't remember their names. What, Pete, what are their names?
Cursed and Ruddle? Cursed and Spuddle?
Tellarist?
Tellarist and Curdle.
There you go.
I was pretty good.
You were pretty good, sound. Josh.
You had the Urdle sound.
Yeah.
You knew you had to gurgle.
Yeah. Josh, what do you have any thoughts about this Quick Ben Hedge convo?
Just that I wish everyone in this group, you know, I really want to like this group. And do you know what's stopping me from liking this group is that I have decided I don't like Hedge at all. And I'm really done with Hedge. Yeah.
What does
and you know who
Hedge
else doesn't
be?
Like Hedge is Quick Ben. So I'm with Quick Ben.
You
on
can
this
tell
one.
He's a little miffed with him.
Yeah, I'm kind of annoyed with Hedge. He's not my favorite, especially after so long with Fiddler. So just not a huge fan.
Damn.
Yeah, sorry.
Wow.
To all those Hedge apologists out there, it's okay. You don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell me I'm wrong.
Guys, what's a lance?
A lance?
A lance is like a spear that you couch under your arm and you only use it while riding on a horse. You know, like a knight's tale when they like joust.
Yes.
Yeah, those are lances.
There's a lot of lances being used in this chapter.
That's like
because there's a lot of horse fighters. Well, yes.
And that's like the eater weapon of choice as well.
All right.
Or I guess it's Troll's weapon of choice.
As a spear, then?
No, they're not the same as a spear.
A spear you can throw. A lance is like heavy and big.
Oh, I don't know, AJ. I would say a javelin you can throw.
A javelin you could throw.
A spear you can still throw. A two-handed weapon. You can throw a spear, but javelins are designed for throwing.
But I think the distinction between a spear and a lance is I don't think you could throw a lance.
You can't throw a lance. It's too heavy.
So you could throw a spear. So I'm not wrong.
Yeah, right. But I could throw a dog. Doesn't mean they're designed for throwing.
Yeah, but if you say, what's the difference between this? What's the difference between a Chihuahua and a St. Bernard? You say, well, you can throw a Chihuahua.
Okay.
Wait,
right,
but one more thing.
I hear what you're saying.
So when they're like.
Feet's face right now. Oh, God.
When they're like what?
Go ahead, India.
When Hellion gets like, they're like lances. speeding past her. Is that people on horses then?
No, they were, oh. He was using the word lances, but like it's more, it would have been more appropriate to call it a spear javelin probably. I guess probably there is a, I guess some people probably do call them lances, but they were spears being thrown by her head.
Four lances speeding Hellion's way came close.
Well, then in that case, Steve chose to use the word lance.
You can throw
scenario.
Lances. You heard yeah, it.
But it's not the same weapon. He's just using the words interchangeably.
Pete, you've been trying to say something for like 4 minutes.
It's true. I was going to say we should go to medieval times. That was my pitch.
I love medieval times. I've only been once. So good.
Me. You couldn't fucking pay me.
No. Oh my God. Serious? India. We have India. To go now that you said that to me.
Guys.
What's your beef with medieval times? Sorry, what's your big turkey leg with medieval times?
You eat a big turkey leg? You're like, I bet the blue guy is going
to
win.
Soup without a spoon?
It just seems like kind of gross.
If you gross is fine.
Oh my God.
It is gross.
It's a little gross, but come on.
And like, I don't know. Like, how are the horses treated?
What if like a hot Heath Ledger is there talking about lancing? I don't know. I haven't seen Night Tales in a while. I guess that's what it's about.
Heath Ledger.
Treat their horses well.
He's in a Night's Tale.
He's in a Night's
He's
Tale.
He's a full skeleton at this point.
Jesus.
All right. So I'm on So Yummy.
Oh my.
Who's a full skeleton?
Heath Ledger.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
God.
Whoopsie-doodle.
Brutal.
I'm reading on SoYummy.com their article, former 23 employees from medieval times share their secrets. And it does say the horses are generally treated well.
Oh, thank God. I thought the sentence was going somewhere else, Josh.
Moving on. We're still in Talan. We get this whole convo between Hostile Raider talking about, oh, this is an illusion. We should be ready to turn back into dust because once the illusion fades, we're not going to be able to bear it or whatever. Rudelal's like, no, that's not going to happen. And Unrak's like, yeah, sure, I'll agree with you. And Rudelal's like, really? And then Unrak does not say anything back, but does cause Hostile Raider, this character who we have just been introduced to, I think, to immediately 180 on their stance and be like, well, I guess we're with you. Like, okay, well, this was an interesting couple of paragraphs that we've just kind of turned back around on ourselves. Josh, do you think...
I kind of love this. I want to just jump in. I kind of love the whole illusion conversation because to me, there's an element here where it's like a lot of these people have, and they were kind of talking about their trauma. And to me, it's like, is this an illusionary paradise? Is this kind of a mate? Is like, or is this actually a place? Is this somewhere we can go? And is there a place to go after this trauma? Is there a new ground, so to speak? So I just kind of enjoyed that conversation. So. And like the friendship's beautiful. We love the friendship.
The friendship is beautiful. That's what happens. I was going to ask Josh, do you think that there's a betrayal coming?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it seemed pretty clear to me that if they were going to fucking do it, it was going to be now. Yeah. So I don't really think there's going to be betrayal coming. I think if anyone's going to betray anyone, I think it's going to be Rudelal out knowing more than he lets on and not really being super truthful with like exactly what's going to happen, you know?
So you don't think Rude is actually this idealistic man child?
Well, we'll see. You know, it's hard to say when we've only known him for this little bit. Sure. I mean, he's like the son of a dragon, you know, and that dragons are notoriously, you know, the worst.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
You know, I really don't love the dragon hate.
I mean, India, every dragon we've met, except maybe Anamander Rake, but he's Andy first, dragon second, I think. They've been pretty bad.
Wow. I get he has to choose one. Wow, AJ.
AJ, that's a little.
I'm also using, you know, other books I've read, and there are the occasional good dragons. But do you know what they're outweighed by is the millions more bad ones.
I mean,
so
there's like a dragon genocide.
Yeah, that's not great. That's, you are
that
not
is
wrong.
True.
I'd be pretty pissed too, guys. I'd be pretty pissed too.
All right. No,
that's right. Dragon
enough.
Solidarity, baby.
You heard it here
I
first.
I stand with dragons.
I can't wait for the next book for us to find out dragons are the most evil fucking creatures in India. Has
well,
to
I just like
this back.
No, the Jag Cut is.
Wow.
I do think India's on to something with the dragons just like being pissed because they're all of their people were killed. They're not necessarily evil. They're just like fucking mad. But I do feel like of all fantasy tropes that we're kind of straying away from in this book, Steve can like one of the only consistencies is that like, no, dragons are still bad in this universe as well. I don't know.
Are Gellerist and Curdle bad?
I think they're just waiting for their moment.
Yeah, they've talked multiple times about if we were bigger, we would just kill them all. Like they've said that sentence.
Dragons are like the cats of like violent animals. Turtle and Keller.
Okay. Yeah.
They're like cats. Like, yeah, they'd kill you if they could, but they're small, so they can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Quick Ben says the Finist is here. Cool, I guess.
Whatever that means.
Right. And then we get some.
Like, is that why he's just looking at stones, like seeing, are any of you magical stones?
Yeah, I think he's just going through pebbles because he's looking for the Finist. And then we go to the Saren crew up in front of a big gate. Udonas outs Clip for being an assassin because he's got a garrote. And then they walk through a gate. And that's really all that I mean. And Saren does some she compares Eater and Lethary cultures in terms of like gendered. I don't know, not hierarchy, but like there's different things that happen in Eater society that don't happen in Lether society in regards to like gender.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Pete, did you think anything about this kind of introspection and thought from Saren or?
I guess I would like to know more about it, I suppose. But I feel like some of the world building around that is, I don't feel like it's very substantial. Mm-hmm. And whenever I read a section like this, or I alluded to that thing earlier, I guess I just feel a sense of like, what do you mean? You know, and I just have like, you know, I know because I know how much it's addressed and it's not addressed that much. So yeah. I don't know. I don't super bite into it. So, I just feel a type of frustration, you know.
Ooh, frustration. With these books? These 10 books? I don't think you've ever been frustrated on this podcast ever.
It's like, what do you even mean, bro? What do you mean? That's how I feel. Okay?
So then we walk through this gate. We're in Starvald Demolane. It's just all volcanic ash and dead dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it always dead dragons?
That doesn't seem good. Right? I don't know.
Right. Who killed these dragons? Who are these dragons?
We've seen like slight bits of them being sort of dead and crucified before, but now they're all there. Right. Yeah, it's not great.
We have seen dead dragons, but this is like India said, this is like a dragon genocide or something. But I don't know. Oh, I guess we'll find out later in these books. Does anybody else have any thoughts before we move on to our patrons?
Which nope, not we done can't. In a couple we of cannot yet. And we're cutting in. That's right, Josh. Peter and Josh, you're stealing the podcast to quick take us away into an epigraph section. That's right. We have a great epigraph to this chapter.
We do.
And I will read it now. Open to them your hand to the shore. Watch them walk into the sea. Press upon them all they need and see them yearn for all they want. Gift to them calm pool of words, watch them draw the sword. Bless upon them the satiation of peace, see them starve for war. Grant them darkness and they'll lust for light. Deliver to them death and you hear them beg for life. Beget life and they will murder your kin. Be as they are and see you different. Show wisdom and you are a fool. The shore gives way to the sea and the sea, my friend, does not dream of you. Gang, gang, what's up, Steve? Shout out. Great poem. It's a legend. It's an all-star for a reason. You know, we love this
one. Yeah, so good.
It's really, really good.
I skip every epigraph.
I know, India. But it's like the sea, India, does not dream of you. And it's like the shore is giving way to the sea, you know?
Yeah.
Nope.
It's like maybe the world's indifferent, baby. Do you ever think about that?
Whoa, man.
Anyway, shout out to the Sheikh. It's a great prayer, and it's one of the best poems for a reason. So,
yep, good shit. And before we move on to the next chapter, let's thank our lovely people on Patreon. India, do you want to thank our lovely people?
I would love nothing more than to thank our lovely people. First and foremost, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I've written a little song.
Oh.
The Patreon, we love you all for your support.
Another one.
TJ!
I'm gonna thank you all one by one. Thank you, Christoph, Mark, Stannis, the Menace, Jim, Bewleys, Doncho, Sierra, Ian, Super Nintendo, Chalmers, Brent, Mally, or Molly, Hans.
We got them all.
You need to end on Hans. You ended on T there.
Hans.
On three, Peter, you do the low. Josh, you do the middle. I'll do the high. And AJ, right. you do the super low. One, two, three.
Hans.
Were we saying I said Hans?
Yeah, no, I said Hans. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Thank you. India, thank you so much for that. That was great. Everybody, thank you so much. I know we haven't thanked you over the last couple of episodes, so sorry about that. But if we had, you wouldn't have gotten that lovely song. So,
well,
really,
happy New Year, and the show is supported so much by their patrons. We feel really an immense amount of gratitude about it. So,
yes.
That's why I wrote that song for you.
For gratitude. All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody. Let's move on. Chapter 22. Gascarol Tromm once again saves Brol Handar's life from Lethary assassins. He reflects on Factor Letter Annex pension for redundancies. Brol Handar wakes up feeling refreshed and ready for battle. He talks briefly with Atri Preda Bivat about their plans for the coming skirmish. They only have two mages left in their encampment. Torrent harasses Tok some more after Tok finishes writing the next chapter's epigraph. Red Mask has asked Tok to be ready to take the children in the event that Gunth Mach and Sug Charak fall. Tok is worried about these K'chain Chamal. Three Falari heavies, Loopback, Drawfirst, and Sholi, observe Gessler and Stormy, taking note of their golden skin. Lookback thinks they betrayed Fenir, but the trio agrees that they will die beside the pair. Beak tells Faradan, Sort, and Keneb that Fiddler, Gessler, and Hellion's squads are up ahead in the village. He's able to sense every squad mage's power and says that Stormy and Gessler were reforged in the fires of Talan. He talks about Telus, the fires that dragons would fly through to gain immunities. Beak explains that soon there will be thousands of Eater troops upon the village. Bottle technically has a conversation with Nepfero, a Dalhanese mage from Baden Grux's squad. The Bone Hunters begin a quick retreat from the city. Korab thinks this will be the Bone Hunters' last stand. He believes he will finally get the glorious death that Leomin robbed him of. Siren Kinar and the Letheri forces look out onto the Malaz-occupied town, praising their battle prowess. As Letheri mages make their way to the battle stations on Kusan Tapi, the K'chain Chamal, the Damned Lizards, emerge from the muck and cut them down. Master Tactician Natarkus defies Red Mask's battle plan and immediately engages with Eater forces on the opposite side of the Letheri encampment. Brol Handar observes this all ambush, arrows descending onto his squad. They all begin to retreat, but are taken down by the Blue Rose Cavalry. Natarkus thinks of freedom as he dies. The Letheri begin using the bodies of fallen soldiers as human shields from the onslaught of all arrows. As they close in, they throw these bodies into the mud and use them to gain higher ground. The sun beats down on this one last battle. Fiddler and Cuddle discuss whether they should advance when a wave of Letheri sorcery begins to sweep toward the Bone Hunters and the waiting Eater army. As he prepares a protective barrier for the Malazans, Beak thinks about the last time he saw his brother. He lights all his candles as bright as they'll get. He realizes now that purification is final. As Beak's barrier washes over them, all the Bone Hunters' wounds heal and armor repairs, and their hair turns white, except for Stormy and Gessler, who get even more golden. Fiddler invites the Eater into the dome as they toss their swords aside and accept. The Kriznan are burned to ash as they enter, being too corrupted by chaos to be purified. As the lethary magic descends on the barrier, Beak is overtaken by the flames from his candles, but the pain has been scoured away. Beak has saved the ones he loved, his friends. Lethary mages are buffeted by their deflected magic and blown apart. The remaining army receive word that the Malazans have come ashore and are approaching the river. They turn to head the assault off. Faradan's sword finds Beak's charred remains, hugging his knees to his chest. So small. Henrati Kellag tells Fiddler that Rulad is unbeatable and says they're going to return to their village to begin rebuilding. Beak is greeted at Hood's gate by Hood, who tells Beak that his brother waits on the other side of the gate, that he's been waiting for a while. Beak sees his brother sitting by a stream, surrounded by wax figures. They were made for him. They're beautiful. Hood continues to wait. Rolhandar is overtaken by bloodlust. Messark thinks back to his Death Knight. He thinks Red Mask has failed the All and is killed by a Lethary soldier, muttering to himself, "Keep me alive, please." Red Mask rides toward the Lethary camp with thoughts of killing Bivat. As the K'Chain Shemal gather at his side, he thinks of how he is chosen and of victory. Sag Charak and Gunth Mach kill Red Mask. Tok sees the tides of battle turning against the All, but on the horizon sees an unknown army, hopefully coming to their aid. He gives Torrent his manuscripts and tells him to take the children toward the mysterious riders on the horizon. Tok rides toward the battle. Tok fires off 8 arrows, each striking true. He begins to fight with his scimitar, but is overtaken by the Lethari, who take his face as a trophy. Tul, Hatan, and the rest of the White-Faced Bargast clan emerge from the Warren of Talan. Tul had intended on killing everyone in this battle, but upon observing the bravery of that soldier riding alone into battle, decides that the All must be worth saving. For now, at least. Tul asks Torrent what he's carrying, and Torrent says they are the scribblings of that soldier, the Mesla. Tul realizes that the brave soldier he observed was Tok, and begins to wail. Kalava Onas, Tul's sister, sees that the Eater are beginning to join with the Lethari, and Tul begins to ride toward the army, saying the children will live. Bivat watches the Bargast begin their ride toward them. She and Brolhandar recognize the standards and get ready for a final confrontation. Venet Sathad kills Factor Leader Anakt. He is indebted once again. Hetan sees her husband kneeling next to Tok's body. She thinks of all the losses suffered that day and the losses to come. Kalava and Hetan look over the corpse of Red Mask. Kalava says the mask is made of Matron's throat. They remove the mask, revealing the pale face of a Lethari man. Hood greets Tok at his gate. Tok thought his soul was sworn to the wolves. Hood tells Tok that his father promised his soul to the Lord of Death. He asks Hood why he still only has one eye. The Reaper gives no reply. Damn wolves. There it is. That's the summary. So, another new character.
But this one's
starting
awesome.
Off strong. Yeah. So we meet Gaskerel Traum. Josh, you seem pretty hot on him.
Big fan of Gaskerel Traum.
Yeah. I mean, just the vibes, the fact that he stopped 10 assassins from killing
Brolhandar. Yeah, it's pretty much that. If you're an assassin, you know, that's you're good in my book. I like you.
Yeah.
Now, are the Lethari the bad guys? In this war, maybe. It's kind of hard at this point. I think yes, but like everyone's kind of shitty. Yeah. But like Bro Handar, until he discovers that he likes to murder people, you know, he's a pretty cool guy up until then. So I think the fact that like someone's been helping him is great. Now, am I happy they're all going to die? Yes, 100%. That's great. Yeah. But for this brief moment, I was like, yeah, let's go. I like this guy. He was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a cool thing. And at the end of this section, when, you know, after Bivat tells Brol like all that Gascaral Traum has done, he's like, oh, I have to die by this guy's side. And he like,
I like that. Finally, Atreprita Bivat, it just like humbles the shit out of them. Like, they've tried 10 fucking times, you imbecile. And it is through the work of that guy over there that you're not dead 10 times over, you big idiot. I loved it.
You big idiot. Yeah. I like at the end of his section, and then we just don't come back to it, is he ends up with a pile of bodies in his tent. He's like, well, shit.
Yeah.
I don't really know why. Maybe it's just the name. I feel like I'd get a beer with Brol Hanadar. Seems like a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
Brol! Yeah, that's the kind of name you'd yell at a bar.
You know? Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
I'd hang out. You know, what's up?
Yeah. I'd chill. Do you think if you were like best friends, you would call each other Brol mates?
Wow. Wow.
Take a Brol in the hay? Is that something?
Oh, I like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot about the beginning of this chapter, honestly. Like,
well, we got a lot of meat.
Yeah, I say there's a lot of stuff in the latter part of this chapter, so I think I'm kind of going to just kind of skip through.
I think we can fucking get to it. It's Battle City in this chapter, and it's like so the fucking good. It happens. We do it. We're here. We're going to talk about it. Ding dong. The Reaper is here.
But before we do get there, Beak has this whole section talking about Faradan's sword is asking Beak about like if everybody's in the village. And Beak is like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, we have this mage and this mage. And he like calls out Bottle, an old style warlock from the Jakata people, who were the first people on Malaz Island. I don't know if that's new information.
That's just world building, baby.
That's just world building, baby. And then spots Gessler and Stormy, the Falari ones. It's close to my last name. It's pretty funny.
Yes.
and says that they were reforged in the fires of Talan. The ones the dragons flew through to gain immunities and other proofs against magic and worse. So what do we think of that? India, what do you think of that? Of Stormy and Gessler being reforged in this magical dragon immunity fire?
I don't know. How many times are they going to be forged in fire? What does it mean? The fuck does it mean? Can they die?
Yeah, because Truth died.
Oh, yeah. Right. In the fire.
But they're just
Truth.
They're just like blue, pretty much immune to fire and maybe some magic resistance.
Are they ascended?
And swords and stuff.
When they die.
I think. Well, I think they're ascended now. I don't know. I think that was what we were like supposed to think is that they were ascended. But now it's just like, oh, no, they walked through this magic fire.
I want to say in book two, someone said they were like on the brink of ascending or something like that. But I can't remember for sure.
Was that just the bridge burners, though?
Well, they're not bridge burners.
They're not?
Nope.
No.
Fuck me.
Nope. They were high up in the command, and then like the rest of the people got like put way down after the rebellion.
Oh, Jesus.
But they're
Christ.
Not part of the bridge burners. They were their own thing.
Got yeah. Because if I recall, they're actually stationed on the shore of the seven on like a shoreline in Seven Cities.
Before. Yeah, right. Right. Death right. And then they finds him, and that's yes. Yeah.
Yep. 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 Cool. And there, sorry, in while we're talking about Deadhouse Gates, when they are like reforged, like, do you remember that scene? Like, do you remember when they became golden skinned? Because I
on the
don't.
Boat.
Yes, it's yep, on the exactly. boat when they're coming
it's
back.
Landa.
Yeah.
They when they come. Oh, okay.
And
okay,
then
okay,
everything
okay.
goes on fire and they all jump off and then
they fly through several warrens
and then they come out gold.
So the last one, okay. So the last one, the fiery warren was Talan, and they went through the fires of Teles, Carald the ocean. I don't know. The fire, that's just what Beak says, and I don't really know what any of it means. But they're immune, so that's fun. It's good to know that, like, what is happening with them, and they're not just, like, some weird gods or something. They're just dudes who went through some fire.
With gold skin.
With gold skin. So then it's battle time, baby. We head back over to Kwisatzpa, and the battle begins and is immediately fumbled by Natarkus. Oh, man, y'all, I mean, just generally, how are we feeling about this terrible fucking bungling of a plan?
Oh my God, so fun. Look, pretty much as soon as it went to his POV and they was like, I was told to wait, I was like, oh, this fucking idiot. These goddamned all gotta prove their fucking manhoods all the time. I was so mad. I knew it was gonna happen, and like, yeah, exactly what Red Mask said would happen. Like, they drove in and just got fucking murdered. Like, duh, of course.
They got destroyed.
Yeah.
Well, here's a question I'm curious about this battle's progressing. Like, how quickly were you like, oh shit, this is all going bad? Or like, did you really think we were going to make the turn? Or like, did you, where were you at? You know,
I knew going into this, there was no scenario in which the all were the victors.
Yeah. I think we all said as much last week. We were all like, unless something wild happens, there's no way the all come out of this.
Because even just the two Kuching Shemao, like, I get it, they took out the mages, but like, just the overwhelming numbers, you know, it was just, they were never going to win this battle.
And did you think they had a chance?
No, there was not enough of them. And honestly, like, you know, the Kuching Shemao, I thought were going to be like every time we ever read about them, there was like, oh my God, they're here and we're all gonna die. And then suddenly now it's like, oh wait, they're all here, but they're actually not gonna kill everyone. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was weird, well, guys. Was that not weird that these Kuching Shemao are like so insanely lethal and they like walk up to you?
Well, they are in you, but you remember in the third book, like the Kuching Shemao are really deadly when you are not prepared. But, like, they are still mortal. Like, all you have to do is poke them enough and they will die.
Right. And they even say, like, Bivat says in this chapter, it's like, oh, like, our strong,
heavy spears.
Yeah, our heavy spears are, like, piercing their hide. We just, like, need to.
Because much like in Fire Emblem series, heavy spears specifically are good against armored opponents.
Right.
As AJ knows.
That makes sense.
Heavy spears, I don't think, exist in Three Houses, actually.
They do.
Heavy spears are much more lethal than light spears.
Maybe I'm wrong, AJ. I'm checking.
Nah, I think all like the heavy armor ones are called like armor stabber or something. They all have like armor in their name.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't expect as many big, like,
as many, what do you mean, as many big
dead people?
Like in big, in like story important, or like
They're dead. It happened.
I mean, by the end of this chapter, everyone who starts involved in this battle is dead, except for Torrent, who sucks absolute shit, and then like 20 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Torrent feels like we'll get there. We'll get there. That's later. That's later. So we basically spend this whole chapter flashing back and forth between the desert or sea basin battle and the
fucking confusing.
The village battle. Yeah.
It was
The fact that it's the same army attacking both of these people.
Not me thinking it was one large battle.
Right. They're both the Lotharian Eater are the aggressors here. I guess technically they're the defenders. I don't know. Anyway, so the Lethary are up on this ridge. The Eater are on the other side. The Lethary is supposed to be the anvil to the Eater's hammer. Right. And then the Lethary.
Did we talk about Korab with his bunch of weapons?
No, we didn't.
It is funny.
So Korab.
It's one of the best bits in this book by far.
Yeah, it's just like, if you have enough shit, if you throw it, it'll go fine.
No, it's not even that. He's literally like, they will remember the man with many weapons.
Yeah.
And how he could not be felled until he had used every one of them. It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
He's such a big dumb idiot.
It's his blaze of glory that he didn't get.
Yeah. You know? Well, there's still some book left.
There's still some book left. Yeah. So that does happen. But then we get this huge wave of Lethary sorcery. Uh-oh, a betrayal. Did we see that coming? What did we think?
I mean, they kept saying they wanted to do something, but I don't know. It was confusing because I think all of their plans they said out loud sounded like they just wanted to have the Eater kind of get bled out by the Malazans. I did not expect them to be like, collateral damage, baby. Fuck them up. That was kind of a shock.
I mean, the fact that they sent thousands of Eater soldiers against this, like, I don't know. I guess there are thousands of them. I don't really know how many.
They said there was probably like 7,000 or 8,000 at that point.
Of the Eater. But how many bone hunters are there in
under
this
a thousand?
Under 1,000. Right. It's
of this Marines. And then like there's thousands more in the boats.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, the numbers game seems like you maybe could have done some better scouting or something, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the sorcery's coming and then Beak, little Beak here.
Can I ask a question of the group, AJ?
Yeah.
Do you guys agree with Fiddler in his choice? I'm fully with Fiddler. I would just turn my back to the terrible magic and just be like, nah, if I can't see it, it's not there. It's not going to get me. I love that he chose the other flank.
Yeah, I mean, what are you supposed to do? You know, I mean, you're just supposed to, you got to trust that your magic people can help you, or I don't know, you're going to die. Like, there's no point in being like watching it come to murder you.
Exactly. You know? I just was like, Fiddler gets it. I'm so with him on this.
India, we get this Beak POV. He's thinking about his brother, very sad memory. And then he lights all his candles, creates this protective barrier.
Very sad.
Very sad.
Very sad. It wasn't what I thought would happen. I didn't expect him to die. Mm. And then he died all small. But then he gets to see his brother and it's good.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really, I don't know. It felt like a really good emotional arc for me. I was extremely sad and then I was very happy.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very sad though. I was so sad. I was so fucking sad. Yeah. I just didn't think it would happen.
Yeah.
It's just heartbreaking.
I was fully teared up when he was talking with his brother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So good.
Yeah.
I felt like, if I can step real quick, I feel like this is one of the first times in this series that a character has done something insane, but it was like built up to in a way that I fully was ready for. You know what I mean? I feel like many times in this series, you know, a crazy thing happens and you're like, how the fuck? And then, you know, then Steve has to spend a little while like backtracking and explaining how it worked. This was such a well done, like start to finish, you know, very soon after meeting Beak, I was like, ah, this poor bastard's going to do something cool and die. And you know what? He did. And it was beautiful.
Yeah. I feel like it's similar to like introducing the idea of like a shield anvil in Memories of Ice and like what a shield anvil does. And they take in all this sorrow and like, that's their whole job. And then with the Idkovian payoff at the end, I think it's kind of a similar arc there.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good stuff. Love Beak. Best boy.
Yes.
Purification is final, you know?
Ugh.
Yeah.
What a line.
What a fucking line, dude. Also here, the Eater throw down their swords. They're like, well, fuck this. Well, there's like one way that we survive this, and it's to surrender. So they do, and they walk in and they're fine. And then we head back over to Kusantapi. I mean, Beak dies. That whole thing happens. But we head back over.
We're not going to talk about them being all white.
Oh, well, yeah. What do you want to say? They're all white. What is that?
Yeah, it's extremely anime.
It is really. They've reached their Super Saiyan form.
Extremely anime. They've been purified.
Making everyone all white.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I mean,
but the red hair is golden. That's something, you know.
Yeah. I mean, with hair,
Steve.
Josh. I don't know if that's as sculptory as you think it is.
Yeah, uh-huh, with hair uh-huh. though, and you.
What know, do you mean you by that?
You purify the pigment from the hair. There's only white left. That's why old people turn white. They got that white hair. Well, yeah, I don't know if it's pigment, but it's whatever makes your hair a color.
Black people's hair turns gray.
White people's hair can also turn gray or white. Like,
I'm
I don't know. anyway. Yeah, and fucking God, now I'm just thinking about Stormy and Gessler are just full Super Saiyan now. Like, they are just completely gold-haired everything. Yeah. Like, they're ready to fucking
they
go,
have to
dude.
Look terrifying.
I love that the Eater immediately are like, wow, we have done some fucked up shit. We're out, actually. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't want them to join in on the fighting. I thought that was such a better option for them to just dip.
Do you think when they crossed into the dome, the Kriznan were burned away because they couldn't be purified, but do you think that these Eater, like, I mean, they had already surrendered, but do you think them walking through the dome was like, oh, we're not going to fight anymore. We're just going to go back to our village. Like, do you think that was what did it?
No. The dome was, please save us, you know, and we'll figure the rest out after. We've just been betrayed.
Right.
And the dome turned them into, wow, let's just go back to hunting seals. This fucking blows.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Back on Kusantapi. Massark thinks Red Mask fails. Massark dies. Rest in peace, Massark. And then, hey, The K'Chain Shamal kill Red Mask. Pete, when you read this the first time, were you surprised?
Yeah, I think I was surprised. I mean, it was a long time ago, but it's definitely not how I thought this whole thing was going to wrap up. So
yeah, it did. It kind of felt like weirdly abrupt, and like there wasn't much. I mean, this we've been talking. We talk about Red Mask every time we talk about the All, obviously, but like we spent barely any time with him in this chapter. or in the last few chapters, like in this whole section of the book, we haven't really gotten really any Red Mask speak. Yes, Josh.
Which I wonder if this was the real Red Mask or not.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's what I think too. But like when we get the Red Mask POV here, he's like,
I know.
Thinking about, that's what's confusing to me. Cause I went back and read that section. I was like, maybe the Red Mask POV isn't as like, but I don't know.
Yeah. It's confusing, man.
You think maybe he peaced out at some point?
I don't know, because I don't think that, yeah, because that's the problem, is that POV really sees the Kachin Chamal as his, and who would be thinking that if not fucking Red Mask?
Yeah. But so. It's got me thinking, maybe...
Is there a real Red Mask out there? And this guy's just been using the name, but then why is he so good at the weapons? And he talks about the East. So many fucking questions.
Right. Well, and then we get his whole, like, he's got the flashbacks of his family. Like, yeah. He talks about that. And now it's got me thinking... Maybe Red Mask's a ghost or something.
I don't know, man. This is one of the most confusing things I think has happened in this book. If in a chapter we find out that like this was some random person and Red Mask switched with this random person like two battles ago or something, I'm gonna be livid.
Yeah,
I don't know what else it could be. If he's really dead, I'm gonna be pissed that we spent time with him at all. Because we learned jack shit.
Yeah. India, what do you make of this? What do you make of this Kachin Chamal betrayal of I mean, I guess we've kind of already touched on it, but of Red Mask's true identity.
I don't understand.
I'm with you.
I don't understand. I don't know if I thought about it like you guys. Now you guys are like making me think more, whereas I was just like, oh shit, I can't believe that. Kept on going.
Yeah.
But as in, oh shit, I can't believe the Kachin Chamal killed Red Mask.
Yeah.
But now you're telling me that you think that that's not actually Red Mask.
It just feels crazy that it would be Red Mask after all this. Like, that's how he fucking dies. It's just weird.
Could they have just put a Red Mask on someone?
Maybe. I don't know. I just feel like there are a lot of unsatisfying ends to characters in this series. So I would not be shocked if this is just the end of Red Mask. But like, I kind of expected more from a character introduced in book 7.
I like expect anything. There are so many characters. You could kill off any single one of them and it wouldn't matter. Which I learned when they killed off Whiskey Jack.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, true.
I feel like every story in this book is so insignificantly significant to like the larger story. I don't know. I just feel like you could say that his story is wrapped up like this very simply. I kind of want to Google it.
Don't Google it.
Let's not say we did.
I'm just like skimming back over the section.
Me too. PB, thoughts? Words.
Well,
Pete cannot answer that. Just say you can't answer it.
I'm going to say that he's dead.
Okay.
All right.
Only because I really was debating what to say, but I don't really see a huge benefit to you guys reading the next two chapters and seeing that he's not in those chapters. You know, so there are ambiguous elements to the ending of that story, but him being alive or not is not it. So,
okay.
To me, the only ambiguity, which I was talking about with some people on the Discord, is in regards to this last minute, like, oh, he has white skin thing, you know? And
like
I'm
he is lethary person.
I'm curious what you guys make of that as a meaning and what you think that means for his storyline with the Y'all, you know?
But I don't know, because I mean, Hatan says, like, she remarks, like, oh, they all look the same. Like, she says that the All and the Letheri all look the same. Like, they're people just fighting each other.
It's interesting you say that. I read that quote in kind of a different way.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's actually, I think that's kind of why these two battlers are ran parallel, is to kind of draw an equivalency between the battles, is kind of my reading on it, but...
The battle with the Malzans in the battle.
Yeah, it's like, look at these. I don't know. To me, I think I read that quote as like in war, everyone loses. You know, it's like, you know, these justifications. These justifications just don't ultimately. It just breeds violence and death.
Right.
And it's kind of drawing in a comparison between these two types of violence. I kind of like your idea too. So
does he just wear a red mask because he's white?
Yeah,
and
probably
doesn't want them to know that he's like not one of them.
Maybe.
Like he was like hiding. Why did they kill him then? Why did they turn against him?
He failed them. It's so ambiguous.
Failed them how? What was it? What was he supposed to do?
By fucking failing this battle. We don't know. That's the problem. Is like we're not. Yeah. We might not ever know, which would be very unsatisfying.
Yeah, that's kind of fucked up. Not gonna lie. Like if we don't just if we it, that's just the way it is, and they just killed him, and I don't know why. I'm a little bit upset, but I guess a lot of people get killed, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the way that I'm going to read it is that Hatan just can't tell the difference between a white-skinned all or a Letheri person.
I just don't know that. Why say he's Letheri then? You know what I mean? Why sure. even introduce that doubt if it's not going to be like a real thing?
Because Josh, does it really matter? All people in war just end up dead, you know? I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, there's also some readings of this where like someone was saying it's like, oh, well, he was a plant by the Letheri, or that, you know, that's what one of our or talking about that or trying to characterize Red Mask in some way as essentially Letheri and not all. And yeah, I don't know about that. I feel like that's maybe kind of what the book's getting at thematically, but I don't know. I was just curious what you guys thought about it. It's kind of an interesting thing in my head. So
he was shunned from the all after the death of his sister, right? Mm. But did we ever get like specifically what happened there with his
with the factor, you mean?
No, with his excommunication, like what led to
his excommunication. We don't have like a flashback to that if that's what you mean.
Yeah, like we don't get any specific info.
It just really, I don't know. I just wonder what it's trying to get at there is my thought, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd love to hear what people think about this Letheri element and also kind of just bigger yeah. thoughts about the Red Mask stuff. So
mm-hmm. yeah, give us your takes. Email us, tweet us, Discord us. Moving into the called shot zone, Joshua Baker
fucking
from across,
it with
from
white across face the bar court. Gassed. Cannot
fucking
believe I got
Hail
that.
Hail Mary pass the ball through the net. The Whiteface Bargast are here, baby.
Not only with the Whiteface Bargast, also Josh last week on the episode sits there and goes, well, it seems like they're going to die, but they can't all die. What would be the point of the storyline if they all died? You know, they did lose the battle, so.
Yeah. It almost feels like the purpose of this entire storyline was for the Bargast to show up and now go east, the place we thought the all were going to go.
Yeah.
The Bargast are here, baby. Hedin's back.
Yeah. yeah. And Tool.
And he's sad.
Is Tool married to Hedin?
Yeah, they're
yes.
a couple.
That's a new
How
info we
fucking
have.
Fucking awesome. What a fucking payoff.
It's good stuff.
It is. It's
I like
fucking
it.
Yeah. Shit I do like.
Kalava is also here. Don't forget, she can turn into a big panther.
Yes, she's great.
Yeah, and I really love this final scene with Bivat and Brol Handar seeing the standards of the Bargast and being like, fuck. There's no way we're coming back from this. Like,
oh,
we're
yeah.
just this is fucking it, dude. Good stuff. Great that they're here. Sad for Tool. Also, I mean, I guess we've kind of been talking around it. Tok is dead.
I know. I didn't want to think about it because then it's real.
Yeah,
he's fucked up.
He's Tok and Aster.
So sad. And Tok was
the
so
younger.
Close to saving him.
Tok the one-eyed, etc., etc., etc.
And he doesn't even get to go be with his wolf friends. He's fucking stuck in Hood's realm because his dad's part of that cult of Hood that fucking Whiskey Jack was in and all those fucking people.
Yeah. And he says he drops that Dasimul Tor didn't stay to his word. Have we heard that before?
I think that's the first time you hear about it.
Yeah, I don't think we knew that Dasimul Tor was. I mean, we still don't even have a great grasp of who the fuck that is. I forget.
Yeah, well, that's every time his name comes up, I'm like, do we know anything about Dasimul
Tor?
Maybe
he was the first sword of the Empire. Maybe he's asleep in an Azath house somewhere.
He was the first sword when Kelenvet and Dancer made the Empire.
Is he in the house with Kalam, asleep, recovering? Or is that his daughter or something?
His daughter is in the Azath house in Seven Cities. They saw, you see her there in Deadhouse Gates.
That's okay. That's it.
Jesus. What a pull, Josh.
Guys, I want to read this thing that I like.
Yeah.
So it's when Tool and Hatan are talking. Mm-hmm. It's so sad. And he's like, they betrayed him. Yet see this day he rode to the enemy to save the lives of these children. Yes. I do not understand. And then she says, You've told me many tales, husband, of your friend, of Tak the Younger, and the honor within him. I ask you this. How could he not?
Yeah, dude.
So sad, but so true. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Everything about that was beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
I cry at the Tak death this time. I knew it was coming. I still was really sad about it. So
especially
it's really good.
Yeah.
It's just like the boy has only ever taken licks, you know?
Mm-hmm. Tak the L taker, you know?
That's all so he true. Does is take one for the team.
Literally. Well, in fairness, the whole thing with the matron was like low key his fault, but
his fault?
Well, if I recall, he was like, man, all these people are so strong and I'm just holding them back. I'm going to go off
on my own.
You know
what? You are not wrong.
And that's when he went to Annistar, right? And then he got captured
by them, and when was with the whatever they were.
The Screaming Emmys.
Memories of Ice is such a good book. Incredible.
It really, really is.
Yeah.
Agreed.
That's kind of like every time we get near the ends of these books and like we're reintroduced to stuff from like the previous books and inevitably something from Memories of Ice. I'm like, man, Memories of Ice is a good fucking
Memories
book.
Memories of Ice is a good fucking book. This is good, too, though.
Yeah. This is also good. I'm so glad you're liking it. And when the Bargast show up, Tool says something about seeing the murdered Grey Swords and wolves running away with their hearts.
Yeah, we saw that. We saw that happen.
Yeah, I just like that's something, right? Like
they were taken to the wolves, you know?
I don't know, but I just think back to like when Coltane dies. And all the ravens come, or the crows come to take his soul or whatever.
I hear you.
Like, I feel like it's got to be something, you know? I don't know. But I think maybe you just might be right, Josh, that it's just like the wolves come to take what's theirs or whatever. I mean, that's kind of the end of the chapter. Hood meets Tak at the gate. Tak says, where's my eye?
That was funny.
Hood says nothing. And then we end on damn wolves. So that's chapter 22. Guys, I got to say, these are some good chapters.
Yep.
These are some good. I'm not usually super hot on the chapters that are like all battle, but big into
well,
this one.
Well, these were like
big
into more this one. Like, I feel like usually I don't know, for some reason, this felt more like emotional, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
For me, at least. Maybe it's because I knew the characters. So I was like, what the fuck is going to happen? Whereas before, I'm usually like, and also it was like less tactical. I feel, I don't know. It was a lot easier. Well, in fairness, I also thought this was one large battle, but it felt a lot easier to digest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a bit since we've had like end of the book battle payoff, you know? I think, right? Like, God, how's the last book end?
I forgot, as soon as you said that, I started thinking about it. It ends at Melas City, which isn't a real battle.
Yeah, it's like kind of a battle. I mean, Yucatan's in the middle. Book 5 ends with the courtroom stuff, and it's not really a battle. There's some battle stuff in 5. But
right. But that's more like the campaign. Like we're going through the campaign of the Eater and stuff. Like we don't end on some sort of like, you know, huge military confrontation or whatever. So I don't know. I think it's good. I think it's the most characters we've had involved in confrontations, because it's basically mostly every character except the ones that are in Lether.
Right.
Like, yeah, they're all involved here. So, yeah, I think, India, what you said about it being like it's more emotional, like absolutely right, because there's just so many people involved in all these things. Like all of the Bone Hunters groups are all together now fighting the same battle. You know, that Beak fucking story line is just so sad. So good chapters, good book. I'm looking forward to the next couple of chapters. What do we think, gang? How is this book gonna end?
Well,
I don't know anymore.
You know exactly where we haven't been, guys. To see Rulad.
Yeah, yeah. The Bone Hunter's path is now unimpeded because the Letheri left to go take on Tavor and stuff at the river. So now they're free. The ones at the village are just free to march right on into the Empire.
Yep.
Or into the city, rather. Yeah. Do we think there's gonna be some sort of big... another big confrontation there or what? I personally do not think so.
Here's my call. I still think that at the same time that all this is happening, It's going to be Tehol's drowning ceremony, and Shirkalaw is going to save him from the water as the ships go into the harbor. Mm-hmm. That is my call, or some bullshit like that. Can't wait.
Sure. India, do you have a called shot?
Mael is going to save Tehol from the water.
Mm-hmm.
But also, my called shot is going to be that this whole two chapters is falling action, and nothing is going to be resolved, and we're just going to act as if it never happened in the next book until a few chapters in.
Wow.
Well, do you know what book? We actually probably have to go to a totally new continent with totally new characters, really start a new story.
Pete, I need you to talk. I need you to look me dead in the eyes. Are there any more new continents, Peter? Peter.
You're purposely avoiding eye contact.
It depends what you mean by new.
No eyes.
I will say, I really thought today was going to be a much more serious episode because of all the deaths of such kind of loved characters.
Well, here's the thing, Peter. They're fictional, so.
It's all very sad, and I was like, man, I thought we're really going to hang out, but I feel like we were actually pretty loose show today, just hanging out, baby.
So he just avoided answering that question.
Yeah, but Pete, you did totally avoid that question.
Yeah,
huh?
You did. You did.
What if I answer it with a song?
Oh, yeah. You need a starting pitch?
All right.
That's a good compromise.
Seven cities a sail, Jakaruku, the islands from Storm, Stonewielder. Bum 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 bum, Genabacus. Bum 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 bum, Letharis. There we go. There are several continents. And
that was a bad song.
Maybe there are others.
AJ, take us away from this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to do it for us, unless anybody else has any other hot takes they'd like to level. But otherwise, we'll see you in a couple of weeks for our final episode, and you'll hear from me.
There's only one episode left?
Yeah, dude.
There's a lot of pages left,
baby. We fucking counting it down. It's the final countdown. Do you know what we should do to end the show again?
Copyright infringement.
Let's all sing our chord again. All right, here we go. One, two, three. Bye. Perfect. See you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, everybody. Producer AJ here. Bummed that my Taco Bell order was messed up. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you'd like to give us your thoughts or feelings about this or any of our episodes or thoughts on this whole hosting deal that we've been doing this season, you can always email us 10verybigbooks@gmail.com or tweet us at 10verybigbooks or head on over to our Discord bit.ly/VBBDiscord. That's capital V, capital B, capital B, capital D. Discord. That link will also be in the show notes. Thank you to all of our wonderful patrons over on Patreon. If you'd like to financially support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/10verybigbooks. That link will also be in the show notes. And patrons, keep an eye out on that feed for a special episode. And probably today, if you're listening to this the day it comes out, but in the next couple of days at least. And as always, thank you so very much to Dan Gezerik for making our spectacular cover art. You can follow him on Twitter at @A_W_DanG for the end of Amy's run. And of course, the wonderful music in today's episode, including the remixed intro and outro tracks, is by the one, the only Amaranthan from their album Simulant Rain, which you can find along with their other music, including a single of the remixed show theme on bandcamp.com. Links to their pages will be in the show notes, and 10 Very Big Books will be back in 2 weeks on February 11th, where we'll be discussing chapters 23, 24, and the epilogue of Reaper's Gale. This is it, baby! I'll talk to you then, and thank you so much for listening.
So is that that's the intro now?
I guess it's
about the pen life.
There was a really good intro in our chat last night. Why didn't we use that?
That's, we can't use that intro. That's forbidden. That's for our eyes only.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot.
Oh, okay.
I literally don't know what we're talking about.
Josh, you do know what we're talking about.
Josh, it's specifically about you.
It's in reference.
Is it the trench coat thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the trench coat. Okay.
I love this, actually. This is a really good intro.
No, we cannot keep this in.
Why not? I'm keeping it in.
But now we're just... Well, this is bad radio. We're just taught...
It's gone on too long now, but I think it was funny when we were puzzling it out.
Well,